You've already heard the title. I'm Assistant Commissioner. We have a lot of co-authors in the New York City Department of Health because we have a lot of people in the New York City Department of Health. But I'd like to thank all of my co-authors for helping me put together this presentation today. And I have nothing to disclose. So I will go over just very briefly the scope of obesity. I think we all have a clear sense that obesity is an issue in this country. I will go over some of the research and some of the things that the New York City Department of Health is doing to help promote reducing the consumption of sugary drinks, and then some of our plans related to policy and how we are trying our best to mobilize communities to help support some of the policy initiatives that we have and some of the results and the outcomes that we have for community mobilization. And so we all know we're clear that obesity is a national problem. Over a third of our population is obese, and the same is for New York City. Looking at this map, and we have these maps consistently for New York City, we know that our communities of color and low-income communities are hit the hardest, especially East and Central Harlem, South Bronx, and North and Central Brooklyn, with rates highest for obesity and diabetes as well. And this is just a map for diabetes. Sugary drinks are driving the obesity epidemic. We know it is the single greatest contributor to the obesity epidemic, and Americans are consuming way more calories, 200 to 300, more than they did 30 years ago. And sugary drinks contain enough calories that daily intake of 12 ounces could increase your weight by 15 pounds a year. And then when we link sugary drinks to obesity and diabetes, when we look across this New York City map, we see the circles, and there are the smaller circles and the bigger circles, and we do a community health survey every year, and we ask people how many sugary drinks do they consume. And if you look in the areas where highest prevalence of obesity and diabetes, you can also see that they are also the highest consumers of sugary drinks. Some of the initiatives that we've done in New York City to reduce sugary drinks, we've worked with many public agencies. We have standards that are in place. We have people purchase over 260 million meals and snacks per year, and we limit the amount of high-calorie drinks that they can purchase with those dollars. We have vending machine guidelines in which only low and no-calorie drinks can be purchased. Also in our schools have very strict guidelines now through our DOE wellness policy that really limits the amount of drinks that can be purchased. We got rid of most of our sugary drink, or all of our sugary drink contracts. We have daycare beverage standards that apply to over 2,000 daycare centers across the city. And they restrict beverages and having added sweeteners and for whole milk as well, except for children that are less than two. And then we've also had some really hard-hitting mass media campaigns, which you can see the posters there, the Are You Pouring on the Pounds campaign, in which we try to really first show, you know, the link of sugary drinks to obesity. The first one, we had a YouTube video with a man who was drinking fat. It's disgusting, really, and it hits people kind of hard. And then the one on the left is kind of our second iteration to kind of explain how many packs of sugar are actually in a bottle. And we've had some stepwise expansion of the campaign. So then we had some policy initiatives, broader policy initiatives that were proposed, and most of us have heard that across the country, several entities have proposed, you know, a tax. In New York State proposed an excise tax both in 2009 and 2010. It was a 1 penny per ounce excise tax, and it was estimated to decrease consumption in New York State by at least 10%. And both times it did not go through. And then also in 2010, we proposed, and New York City was to be a pilot site for a 2-year demonstration project to remove sugary drinks from the list of products for those who receive SNAP benefits, which is SNAP, as most of us know, is a supplemental nutrition assistance program. But that was denied by the USDA in 2001. But what we learned during the time, you know, when the tax was proposed, especially during the first and second time, is that, and many of us have heard, that the community really wasn't prepared for that message. Most of us had not heard that message as far as this link of sugary drinks to obesity. And we received a lot of pushback from community about what are you talking about. And so a lot of things happened. We had beverage industry mobilized, as many of you, if you are in these larger cities, with counter advertisements. Some felt we were unfairly targeting people of color in low-income neighborhoods. We recognized there was definitely inadequate knowledge as far as the relationship and the link between sugary drinks and obesity. And there was really little political support, which is exacerbated by the lack of community and knowledge. Now, we had significant support from the mayor level, Mayor Bloomberg, but as far as a lot of the other local politicians, whether they were city or state level, we really didn't have that much support at that time yet. And so this is just one of the ads that, you know, was in the city that was very prominent, say no to the beverage tax. And he moved very quickly. And so, you know, the New York City Department of Health, we had to think, what is it that we were going to do, one, to educate our population? And, you know, when you look at the tobacco epidemic or the tobacco story, you know, it took many years of education in order for a lot of the policies to be accepted that came forward. And we thought, well, we know we really probably need to do the same thing for sugary drinks. And so the way the health department is structured is that we have district public health offices. When Tom Frieden was the commissioner, who's now at the CDC, was a commissioner at the health department, in 2003 decided to create these district public health offices. When you looked across the city, the maps that I showed earlier, there were always these areas that consistently lit up, always the areas with the highest or the worst health outcomes, also with the worst socioeconomic conditions that existed as well. And so at that time, he created these three district public health offices, again, in East and Central Harlem, South Bronx, and North and Central Brooklyn. And the focus was really to promote health equity and reduce the inequalities or disparities related to health in those areas. And there are several ways in which we go about doing that, initially very service-oriented and focused. In that way, we all have a research team that we do community-level research right there in the community. We have great neighborhood reports, so we have a clear sense and a pretty good sense of what's going on in these areas. And then now we've kind of moved into this role of advocacy and helping to inform advocacy and policy change, because as we all know, public health has shifted, you know, towards more policy efforts. So then we have to think about, so then what's the role of this community level kind of arm of the health department in order to help promote and push policy levels or policy initiatives on the city level? And so during that time, between the two proposals between 2009 and 2010, we came together, the district public health offices as a team, and said, you know, we need to really raise the level of consciousness about the dangers of sugary drinks. And that we didn't only just want to go out and just provide education and do just an educational workshop, but how could we get people to actually change the environments in which they were working or their organizations or which they conducted meetings so that it became easier for people to make the healthy choice when they were in those environments. And then also at the same time, knowing that there was going to be a chance that in 2010 the proposal may not go through, if that were to happen, if we were to propose another tax further on, can we build a constituency of people that would then be informed and then would help also kind of push and promote a policy if it came forward again for a tax? And then, you know, in broader terms, can we shift some social norms? And then also, can we empower the communities to have a sense of ownership over the issue? So we created a mobilization plan. So at this time, this is when Obama was running for president. And we were having conversations with community organizers. And they actually helped us create kind of a model using some organizing strategies. So in which you go to an organization, you identify where they're at, then you label them as a champion or a supporter or an activist, is the terms that we used. You determine what level they're at, and then you follow up with them based on whatever level they're at. And so we created this action kit, and I didn't bring one with me, but within the action kit, and it's a really pretty action kit. It has the poster on the front, but inside it had a PowerPoint, very simple PowerPoint presentation inside that the organization could actually conduct themselves if they wanted to. We would do it. We had staff members who would actually do it. It had a poster inside, a letter from the health commissioner, and a DVD with some of the public service announcements that they could share or distribute throughout their organization. I talked about we used some basic organizing strategies to create a plan for follow-up. We had a database that was created by our research teams to track the activities. And then we trained our staff. So these are some of the organizational change strategies. There were 8 of them, and some of them were related to environmental, so changing the vending machines, limiting the sales of beverages in the cafeterias, but some of them were purely educational, which is on the bottom, which was like posting posters and things of that nature. So these are the results after a year and 2 months. We started in June of 2010 and ended this past August. And so the first time we actually did presentations, our staff at 345 organizations, which is a lot in New York City with about 9,000 people attending. And the organizations that we reached out to were faith-based organizations, community-based organizations, youth-serving organizations, some of our other larger city agencies like NYPD, community boards. We had a community board that actually signed a resolution to say that they wouldn't serve sugary drinks during their meetings and anything else that they conducted. And then we did education only. We wanted to capture everything that we did, so those were more health fairs, the education only. And so we reached as far as organizations, 396, because some of the meetings we went to had coalitions there, so there were multiple organizations. And about 190 of those organizations adopted at least one policy, which our target was actually 50%. And so this graph here just shows the range over the year, the number of organizations that we reached every single month. Our target was 20 organizations across all of the district public health offices, and then you can see the maroonish line that shows the percentage of organizations adopting at least one or more activities. And there's no consistency as far as across the year, but it definitely ended up, we definitely ended up reaching our targets. So this is just a pie graph that demonstrates those who adopted 4 more activities were considered champions. That's the purple pie slice there. Those who, and they also engaged other people. And that was part of being a champion. Those who adopted 4 or more activities were considered activists, and those who adopted 2 or 3 activities were considered supporters. And so most people were activists or supporters. And the types of activities that they adopted that I had earlier, I said some of them were more environmental, some of them were educational. The majority of people adopted both of them. And so our lessons learned based on the outcomes. So did we increase level of consciousness about the dangers of sugary drinks? We would say absolutely yes. And we outreached to about 50,000 people, but even in the conversations that we have around the community now, many people are aware and have heard it at least, you know, this link between sugary drinks and obesity, which that had not been the case about a year and a half ago. Did we encourage organizational change? Yes, we definitely feel we did, with 183 organizations adopting at least one activity. Do we build a constituency for future advocacy efforts? Yes. Part of the other responsibility that we had was visiting elected officials and educating them on the link between sugary drinks and obesity. I myself actually went to the New York State Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus and spoke in front of them prior to the second time we heard that the bill was not going to go through, but also educated in that effort. And our intergovernmental office has done a lot of work on reaching out to various elected officials to make sure that they were informed. And we now have a database of over 300 organizations, and we have followed up with them to do other efforts. Food Day was last week nationally, or 2 weeks ago, October 24th, and the New York City initiative was to go sugary drink free for a week. And so we were able to reach out to these same organizations to have them participate in this effort. Social norms, we are now collecting data via some of our public opinion polls about sugary drinks and how people feel about them. And we also do our community health survey. So we'll see what the results are related to people's consumptions of sugary drinks. And then as far as sense of ownership and power of the issue, we still have a lot of conversation to go. And we're really trying to figure out what is our next iteration as far as mobilizing communities around the issue of sugary drinks. And, you know, how do we frame the issue? How do we frame the message that needs to go out at this point? Does it need to be something related from a justice perspective? And, you know, do we go towards big industry and say this is what big industry is doing to you? We're still not clear yet, but it's definitely something that we're working on and thinking about at this time. That's it. Thank you. Sure, absolutely. Right. So you. Sure. Go. Did you finish asking the question? This is what you want. Okay. So she was asking what is the criteria for the labeling, and so the criteria are, so if you adopted four activities and the activities were these, so there were eight in total. So if you adopted four of these, and then you also referred another organization, then you were considered a champion. Okay? And then if you adopted, oops, I'm sorry, going in the wrong direction. If you adopted four activities and you just adopted four activities and no engagement with other organizations or no referrals, you were considered an activist. And then two to three activities, you were considered a supporter. And really, this was just based on having a conversation with somebody that did some organizing with the Obama team.
And did you let the organizations know?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's motivating for them to see kind of where they're at in relation, one, to other people. And just, I think it's motivating to do, consider it a champion. You can contact me. Here's my information.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hey, I have been very much interested in the issue of obesity in America, but I am really, here's my question. This is also a socioeconomic issue.
Sure. Right, so the question is, what are the alternatives basically that we're offering outside of drinking sugary drinks? Right. So yes, water is definitely is part of the messaging that we say, and we try to say in New York City tap water because we have some of the best tap water. Granted, a lot of the communities, and especially communities of color, actually have, there's an underlining kind of mistrust for tap water, and it coming through pipes and people saying there's lead there and just not trusting tap water. So the conversation is then, okay, drink water. And then you can, you know, add, we honestly, what we say is add lime or add oranges or things of that nature. The bottom line for me in my real talk conversation, because I present to communities all the time, and this is the communities that I live in and I serve, is that there's no nutritional value in a soda. There's no nutritional value in a lot of these sugary drinks. And I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, I feel I have to have real talk with people. And the bottom line is there is not a healthy value in many of these drinks. So I can say in moderation, I can say decrease the amount of sugar that you put in your drink, or decrease, if it's a mixed drink or something of that nature, if you're going to have coffee, you're going to have tea or something of that nature. But I am very real about it at the same time, because I think the reality is it's not healthy. There's no nutritional value in sugary drinks. And then when I hear the comment about like, well, you know, you're taking our choices away, I said, we're not taking your choices away. Your choice is already taken away based on the communities that you live in. We're already being targeted and marketed by all these companies. We don't have choice to start off with. If they go to the Park Slope or the Upper East Side, they have choice. We don't have choice in Bed-Stuy. And so I try to change the conversation and to help people and frame the message that we have to look more so in our environments and where the money and the power is.
Yeah, very often knowledge by itself is not going to change the behavior.
Clearly. Mm-hmm.
My concern always, you give them all information and then you stop there because knowing that something is not good is not going to change.
Right, and that and exactly. Absolutely right, and as you said, like not education we know alone does not change behavior, right? So we'd say policy is in changing the systems, environments in which people live, but we have to increase the knowledge around what the systems and the environments are doing to people, so that they can be empowered to help change their own existence. Any movement that happens has to happen from the people that are suffering the injustice, which means they have to be knowledgeable, and they are for the most part about what's happening. Right? And they have to be given some of the skills and then in a sense some of the connections and therefore some of the power to actually create change. So, good question. Everybody heard that, right? Okay. So, I don't have to repeat it. No. Most of them are, the initial phase of it was really just educating about sugary drinks and kind of its link to obesity, the number of packets. So your question is kind of the point that we are at right now and trying to figure out what will be the next conversation as far as our messaging around sugary drinks. Do we frame it in the context of justice? It's clear to us as far as us who are in the district public health offices, our focus is social equity, I could say, and health equity and promoting that. So we understand that. It's just as far as what is our message and how are we going to articulate to the community, we're not quite clear kind of what the next step is. When I do presentations to community members, what you just heard me say a few minutes ago is what I say, you know, and because I think it's very important to say that piece of it. Well, that's a good question. At this moment, because there's not an issue or there's not a proposal, I guess, at hand, no. But what we are doing is making sure that we're trying to nurture the relationship and build the relationship so that it also, because you don't want to create a situation in which people feel like they're being used at the last minute, right? And so we want to make sure we nurture in many different other ways. So, you know, having conversations around food day or whatever it is and thinking about other issues that they might be interested in and talking about that so that when another policy issue comes to hand and it's actually real, then we can have the conversation about, okay, where do you guys think you can, you know, who do you guys think you can go to? Where are your relationships that you can have conversations about this particular policy that we're all interested in putting forward? But it's definitely part of the plan. And I will say just lastly, I think to the woman's point also, you know, community mobilization is really, it's somewhat new for the health department. It's a little bit tricky too. And so we're really still figuring this out. This is the first time, not that we've had relationships and we've ask people to promote things, but to actually have a formal structure around doing it, this is really the first time that we've done this. So we're learning a lot in this process and what it actually means to mobilize communities from a health department perspective.
Okay. Well, thank you.